Affairs.
I call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is Friday, May 13th. Time is 1:10 p.m. Present today are Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Von Imhoff is excused, Senator Olson is away, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman, myself, Senator Bishop. Today we have one item on the agenda, SB 107. This is the first hearing of the oil and gas production tax credits, and our intention is to hear the bill introduction and set it aside. Senator Wilikowski will be presenting the bill with his staff, Ms. Sonia Kawasaki. Come on up, Sonia, if you want to grab a seat there. Senator Wilson, I thank you for coming up.
I just have a question.
Here, we'll let him get set down there on the record, and then we can ask him a question.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Wilikowski, State Senator, representing East Anchorage and J-Bear. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to present this bill.
Thank you. Senator Wilson has come up here to give us a quorum. He has a question, and before he's got to leave back downstairs. So, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wilikowski, this is a pretty large, lengthy bill. Just wondering how much of this piece of legislation is similar to the ballot measure, one that failed last election cycle in 2020.
It's, I would say, very similar, if not identical.
And just
follow up
with that, I'm pretty cautious of just taking up a piece of legislation that in my district failed 72% in one district, and the other one was at 74%. And I think that it failed by a 58% margin. And just if the people of Alaska didn't like this piece of legislation, I just take caution of that just for the committee's consideration.
Senator Stedman.
Well, I recognize the concerns from Senator Wilson, but that's before the committee has heard the bill and amended it. There might not be nothing left of it but the title, and we might even change the title. So we have that prerogative here at the table. We all recognize the complexity of this bill and the initiative process and the outcome of that initiative process. But the committee should hear, in my opinion, any finance committee member's bill and give them the courtesy of presenting his or her argument at the table, and the committee then will do what the committee does.
Senator Wilikowski, floor is yours, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to respond to that, I was very involved in the initiative process, and what I will tell you is that I was also involved in a number of the debates, and during some of the debates, plus much of the commentary, many of the opponents of the initiative actually stated that our oil tax structure was broken. They agreed the oil tax structure was broken. Their argument against the initiative, and quite frankly, the argument that many legislators made, the argument that governor made, was that it shouldn't be fixed by the initiative process. It should be fixed by the legislature. That's why we're bringing this forward. I don't think the voters rejected it because of what the bill did. I think the voters rejected it based on the argument that it needed to be done by the legislature. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll go right into it.
Since everybody's getting a little shot here, let me get my little shot in since I'm the chairman. This is the process, and I'm not throwing shade at anybody's comments here, but the hearsay over here and the hearsay over here is just what it is. It's hearsay. What's said on the record, that's the gospel. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so our constitutional obligation is to utilize our resources for the maximum benefit for the people. And as we all know, when Alaska became a state, there were concerns about how we would fund our state. And there were concerns about how we would fund things like education, infrastructure, public safety. Our population was very small. The state's enormous. It's an expensive state. And under the Statehood Act, we received something that no other state in the country has, and that is the subsurface rights to our resources. And that places us in a very unique situation, as we've heard over the years. And our when our founders were asked to select lands in Alaska, they purposely selected lands on the North Slope where some of the people who lived there for thousands of years had recognized oil seeping from the ground up in Prudhoe Bay, for example, in that area. And so we have this unique provision in our Constitution to get the maximum benefit for the people for our resource. And I think that is where our obligation comes to make sure that we're doing so. And this has been something that we've been discussing for since statehood. What is the fair share for our resource? How do we follow our constitutional obligation? And I guess I'll just dive right in and get into how did we get here? How did we get to the fiscal situation that we're in to this day? And I would submit that a large portion of that is because of the passage of Senate Bill 21, which was passed in 2013. And I don't want to cast blame on anyone for voting the way they did. I respect the way people voted. It was a controversial issue. And I think the argument at the time was, well, let's give it a try. And now we have some evidence on the record about how it's worked out. And here's one point of the evidence. Now, Senate Bill 21, as you recall, passed in 2013, I believe in March of 2013, signed into law probably around May or June. It fully went into effect in 2014. And so we can look at how it's impacted our revenue. And you can see now, I put at the very top the price of oil. And you can see we started in 2007 at $61.60. We go out to 2021 at $54.14. The information that we have is derived from the revenue sources book. And you can see there's a dramatic drop off. And I can understand there might be a temptation to say, well, it's low oil prices. And I'll just explain a little bit about why I don't believe that to be the case. Now, this casts an even starker picture because this is production revenues after oil tax refundable cash credits are backed out. And what you see is that from 2015, 2016, 2017, we actually paid out more to the oil industry than we got in production taxes. We got royalties. In a few of those years, we had negative corporate income taxes, but we were effectively paying the oil industry to take our oil. We got the lowest share for our resource that we've ever gotten in state history. And just to give you an example of the dramatic impact of Senate Bill 21, you can look at 2013 and look at 2014. It's the first time in state history you had the price of oil identical over 2 years in a row. Price of oil in 2013 was $107.57. Prior to Senate Bill 21, we made $3.6 billion. Price of oil in 2014 is $107.57, exactly the same. We make $2 billion. Now, you might be wondering, well, what about production? Production actually increased about 2,800 barrels per day. This SB 21 was only in effect for about 6 months. And we lost $1.6 billion in those 6 months, Mr. Chairman. As time has gone on, you can see the revenue has dropped dramatically. Now, to make an apples-to-apples comparison, because I think that's critical, because undoubtedly the price of oil has gone down. Let's look at a couple different years and look at how the price changed. Now, you can see in 2009, this is prior to Senate Bill 21, you had a price of oil of $68.34. The state's share that we got in production taxes was $12.09. You slide over to 2019, the price of oil is actually over a dollar higher, and we get $3.14 as the state share. This is in large part because of Senate Bill 21. You can look at 2010 and compare that to 2015. 2010, the price of oil is $74.90. We get $12.03. In 2010 and 2015, it's $72.58. So it's a couple dollars lower. Not quite an apples-to-apples comparison, but a dramatic nonetheless, it shouldn't be six times lower, in my estimation. Now, historically, you know, this goes to what is a fair share? What's a fair share for oil? And you can see at $72 a barrel in 2015, we got $2 you add on royalties. Well, historically, you remember Governor Hammond suggested that we should get a third. We should get a third. The federal government should get a third. And the oil industry should get a third. We've never gotten a third. I think there was one year, maybe in 2008 under ACES, we got a third. But historically, we've gotten about 27% of the value of our oil. There were, if you look at the prior slide, there were years when you back out the production cashable credits, we were actually getting 12.5%, actually a little bit less than 12.5%. All we were getting was our royalty. And so we were getting much, much less than our historic value. And we continue to get much, much less. If you go to 2007 to 2013, you see we made $28 billion in production tax revenue. And then from 2015 to 2021, we made $1.3 billion. So people ask, where did this money go? And it is money that we have lost. It is money that we should have gotten for our resource that we weren't getting. And this is I guess it's no surprise that this law goes into effect in 2014. We start bleeding money, and then by 2016, the dividend starts getting cut. That was completely predicted at the time, and it unfortunately has come true for the last 6 years to make up for the shortfall. Now, I want to talk a little bit about profitability, where we are in that regard. And this is, I've requested this for years. This is from our Legislative Research Services Department, nonpartisan. And this is from ConocoPhillips, annual reports, quarterly reports. And this just goes to show a comparison of Alaska's profits versus the lower 48 versus their ConocoPhillips, international versus global total. And I'm not picking on ConocoPhillips in any way, shape, or form. This is the only information we have. We don't have information like this for Hilcorp. We don't have it for BP. We don't have it for Exxon because they're not required to file it. We have no idea. In fact, if you sit here in this committee, and I've asked this question sitting in that chair right there, and I've asked it when I chaired the Senate Resources Committee, how much profit does a particular corporation make in this state? We don't know, Mr. Chairman. We're not allowed to get that information. We're not allowed to get the expense information. We're not allowed to get the internal rate of return information. We're not allowed to get the net cash flow information. But we do know this from ConocoPhillips because they're legally required to file this information because of the SEC rules. So what, rather than go through each one of these numbers, I'll just pick a couple. In 2012, for example, you see in 2012, this is annual net earnings, and you see in 2012 they made $2.3 billion in Alaska for an average price profit per barrel of $29.60. You compare that to the lower 48 where they made $713 million for an annual net earnings per barrel of oil equivalent of $4.27. So $29.60 in Alaska, $4.27 in the lower 48. And you compare that to international, where they made a profit per barrel of oil equivalent of $18.82 versus a global total of $11.69. And you can look down every single year, Mr. Chairman. Every single year they had, and take 2015 when the price of oil started to plummet, they still made $482 million in Alaska for a $7.42 profit, whereas they lost $8.86 in the lower 48. Made 91 cents internationally and lost $2.97 globally. You can see the same thing. They lost money everywhere in the world in 2016 except for Alaska. They lost money in 2017 in the lower 48. Alaska is the most profitable place in the world for ConocoPhillips almost every single year in almost every single jurisdiction. So when we talk about Alaska being an expensive place, that's factored in already. When we talk about if we do this, this is going to destroy the oil industry. You can see, and in some of these years, it's not even close, the profit in Alaska versus the profit elsewhere. And I'll just to point out one thing, because I know, you know, the argument will be for that, well, in a lot of these places, they produce gas, and that is true. But just let's look at 2021, because I looked up these numbers and to try to get a comparison. In 2021, Alaska made $19.55 in Alaska versus $18.37 in lower 48. Now, they'll say, well, a lot of that is gas, and that's true, but they produced three times as much oil in the lower 48 as we did in Alaska, and they still made more per barrel here in Alaska. So when the price dropped, now to look into the impacts of how our tax structure works, when prices dropped 62 years a few years ago, Alaska's share of revenue dropped 109% under our current tax structure. During 2016 and 2017, when oil prices were lower, as was mentioned, ConocoPhillips lost $4.6 billion worldwide while making $1.8 billion in Alaska. And the concern that we have here in Alaska is we rely on the industry. It, for years, has generated 85-90% of our state revenue. The producers can adjust their project timing, they can adjust their budgets, they can adjust their costs. We can't do that in Alaska. We have to meet obligations. We have to meet educational obligations, public safety obligations, obligations all across Alaska. And so this bill is an attempt to sort of restructure our relationship a little bit. And I'll get into the details in just a minute. Just real briefly for the people watching home, that we're compensated in effectively two ways for our oil. One is royalties, and the other is production taxes. Royalties are the share the landowner gets. In the lower 48, for example, if you're in Texas, North Dakota, you own a ranch, you own some land, you find oil on your land, you are maybe a millionaire, maybe a billionaire. You will make a lot of money, and you personally will get the royalty. In Alaska, we find oil that's almost always belongs to the state. And so we have a twofold relationship with the industry, and that is, number one, is being the landowner, and number two is being the sovereign. So as the landowner, we collect a royalty, and as a sovereign, we collect production taxes. And when you combine those two, that's really an apples-to-apples comparison when you're looking at the rest of the world. And what you see is in Alaska, the average royalty is 12.5%. And the average SB21 production tax, at least in recent years, it's gone up now, has been around 4%. That's the gross floor. For a total Alaskan share of around 16.5%. Now remember what I said earlier, which was Jay Hammond recommended, Governor Hammond, that we should get 33%. Our historical average is around 27%. We recently have been getting around 16.5%. Now, every dollar, just to give a rough estimate, is around $100 million. So if you figure we're losing roughly 10%, that's about $1 billion in revenue that we're losing. Now, to compare, North Dakota has an average royalty of 18.7%. That's 6 percentage points higher than in Alaska. But that's for a lot of old leases that are incorporated in that. Many of the newer leases are much higher than that, 25%. Texas typically is 25%. So just in North Dakota, the average, including their severance tax, which is 10%, is 28.7% of the gross. They don't allow any tax deductions. They don't allow any tax credits. They don't allow anything of that nature like we do in Alaska. It is a strict gross there for the most part. Okay, so what does Senate Bill 107 do? Well, it makes four modest but needed reforms. Creates transparency, which we'll get into. Closes a loophole that allows producers to deduct expenses from different fields, which is something we've discussed at this, certainly in the building, a concept known as ring fencing. Establishes a true minimum tax rate and adds slight progressivity and eliminates the unnecessary deductible production tax credits. And I'll show you why I think they're unnecessary in just a minute. I want to make clear that this bill, Senate Bill 107, only applies to the large established what we call legacy fields. It only applies to fields that have produced an average of 40,000 barrels a day in the last calendar year and over 400 million barrels over the life of field. There are three fields that this would apply to: Prudhoe Bay Unit, which produces roughly 56% of our oil in the state, the Kuparuk River Unit, and the Kova River Unit, also known as Alpine. New and developing fields would not be impacted by this bill unless they hit that 400 million barrel total over the life, and they produced 40,000 barrels. And it you're looking at least a decade for a field to hit that. A large, very productive field to hit that is going to take at least a decade. Now, just getting into Prudhoe Park and Alpine, these are, as we'll see in a minute, at least regarding Prudhoe, very low-cost fields, extraordinarily high-profit fields. In fact, what the data shows is that in 2018, at $63 a barrel average, Prudhoe had a profit margin over costs of $40 per barrel, roughly. Operating costs and transportation costs were roughly $25 per barrel, and that explains why Alaska is so extraordinarily profitable. Now, the first thing, and I think if I were to say there's probably the most important thing, is this per barrel credit. It's this deductible tax credit that you've heard me talk about for many years. That is probably the most important thing, in my opinion. And if you'll remember, when the Senate passed Senate Bill 21 back in 2013, we passed it with a $5 per barrel credit. That $5, and that passed, and everyone was happy with that. The industry was happy with that. I wasn't happy with that. But the industry overall was supportive of the bill. And the bill went to the House, and in the last minute, that was increased from $5 to $8. And you'll see that that has cost the state roughly between $400 and $500 million per year, that one little change. The second thing that SB 107 does is to raise the net profits tax by 15% over $50 a barrel. The first $50 of the production tax value per barrel would be taxed at a current 35% rate, and then anything above that would be taxed at a 50% rate. Now, it progressively increases. And then, again, these reforms only apply to the three legacy fields. Okay, so the $8 per barrel credit. Well, in 2018, it's been estimated that in Prudhoe Bay alone, that $8 per barrel tax credit cost the state $742 million just from Prudhoe Bay alone. And I would argue that we're getting nothing for that tax credit. The concept was we're going to put this into law. It's going to spur production. It's going to spur investment. It's going to increase the jobs. It's going to put more oil in the pipeline. And so if we're just giving money away, that is certainly not in the state's best interest. And I would just remind people, the producers have a legal obligation under their leases to invest and produce in these fields without incentives, as long as they can make a reasonable profit. The case law is very clear on that. We've had multiple attorneys testify to us over the years that that is the law in Alaska, and so we don't need to incentivize that which is already profitable. Now, a little bit, there's a lot of numbers on this, but this is a research report that was issued March 21st, 2022 by the Alaska Department of Revenue Tax Division. And this really, I think, gets to the heart of what's happening with these production tax credits and what's happening on the slope. You can see this top area here is total lease expenditures. This is how much is being spent, operating costs and capital costs. And if you remember, capital costs are what generally produces more oil in the pipeline. And operating costs are just sort of the general operating expenses. And you can see this is in 2012, now this is calendar year, you had $2.145 billion at Prudhoe Bay, and then it went up to 2014. Now, 2014 is the number year I'm going to compare this by, because that's the year that SB 21 began. So we peaked out at 2659, and then you can see a gradual drop in capital expenditures all the way down at the Prudhoe Bay unit to $997 million. Prudhoe Bay, which we were told we really need these deductible tax credits because we need to, this is where most of the oil is. We need these tax credits to spur investment there. And we see the investment at Prudhoe Bay has just absolutely plummeted. You can see all others on North Slope, $4.6 billion, dropping all the way to $2.6 billion, dropping down $2 billion. And overall slope-wide, $7.3 billion in 2014, dropping to $3.6 billion. If you go now, the capital expenditures is where is really stunning. You see a drop from $877 million at the Prudhoe Bay unit down to $86 million in 2021. $86 million was invested in 2021.
Senator,
yes, Mr. Chairman.
Would it be fair to keynote that with an asterisk, as part of that might be COVID related in that year? Because they were standing down drill rigs and people weren't.
You, I don't. I'll let the producers speak for themselves, except you can look at calendar year 2020, you had 119 million. Calendar year 2019, you had 319 million. Calendar year 2018, you had 202 million.
We'll ask them.
Yeah, and you can certainly ask. But you can see there's a trend down, even before COVID. And now what happened in 2021 was for this $86 million in capital investment, the state gave $715 million in deductible tax credits to Prudhoe Bay. They invested $86 million. We invested in the former tax credits $715 million, Mr. Chairman. That's an astonishing number, in my opinion. And that number is in the $700 million range in these years. So while they were investing, I mean, you could say, okay, they're investing $391 million in 2019. We're still investing in the $700 million range. This is a really, I think, an extraordinary number to look at. Now, this is just a chart that shows you the oil investment on the North Slope as a whole, and you can see peaked out in 2014, and then it's been steadily going downward. It did spike a little bit in 2020 when we had the ballot initiative, and then it's right back down in 2021. This is the cost of the per barrel credits, and it doesn't have the years on it, but I can tell you that we allowed $516 million, and that was fiscal year 14. And then, as you see, the numbers have gone up. So it was $1 billion in 2018, another $1 billion in 2019. And then this is the projection going out this is FY 2022 going out to FY 2031. And you can see over the next decade, we're projected to be anywhere in the $1 billion to $1.2 billion in deductible tax credits. So from FY14 to FY22, we allowed $6.1 billion in these per barrel credits while receiving $5.2 billion in production tax revenue. And then going forward, we're expected to allow another $11 billion in per barrel credits while receiving $8.9 billion in production tax revenue. In my opinion, Mr. Chairman, this is a huge part of our fiscal problem. This is if you were to simply cut the deductible tax credits, you all of a sudden have a significant amount of revenue coming in with very little impact on investment, because they're not investing right now. They are in harvest mode, certainly at Prudhoe Bay, as evidenced by their capital expenditures. Now, the next part is closing the loophole by requiring each field to be treated separately. This is also known as the ring fencing. Again, this would only apply to the legacy fields. Current law allows producers to use expenses from more expensive fields to lower their tax rates on against the legacy fields. This bill requires that taxes be calculated separately for each of these three major fields. And I believe this is sound policy, because what is happening, and we've talked a lot, I know that the chairman from Sitka has talked quite a bit about how oil is different depending on where it's from, and that is absolutely true. And what is happening, just to give you an example, you have some development in certain parts of the state where we get very little in royalties and we get very little in production taxes, and yet we are subsidizing them to massive amounts. And if you look at the revenue forecast, what you're seeing is that this is going to cost an estimated $300 million per year over the next decade. Because, and a large part of this, Conoco is currently developing on federal lands in NPRA. Now, you can look at and compare Willa versus Pikka, and what you see is there is an unfair advantage, quite frankly, that incumbent producers have, because the incumbent producer that is producing at Willa, for example, gets an immediate tax write-off, whereas the new producer, which we're trying to encourage to come to Alaska, Oil Search, they don't get a tax write-off. That is an unfair advantage that the incumbent has. Now, the last thing that this bill does is it changes the way the taxes are calculated, and it changes the way the gross minimum is calculated. And it basically sets it at a 10% hard floor, which is the floor that was recommended when Governor Palin was here. In her initial proposal, her initial bill that she came before us with. And then, so it raises the minimum rate from 4%, a soft 4% to a hard 10% floor, and raises the floor by 1% to a maximum of 15% for every $5 over 50. The current 4% minimum is soft. Producers argue against it. There's been lawsuits over it. SB 107 makes this minimum rate a true minimum and protects the state at low prices. And I'll just walk you through how this bill would work if it were implemented versus what we have in current law. So this is based on 2018. It's order of operations. You had 290,500 barrels per day, and this is all Prudhoe. This is public information. So that was 100 million, 106 million, roughly 56% of North Slope total. For a price of oil was 63.61. So you had roughly $6.7 billion produced. You back out the royalty barrels, which are 92,700,000. Next, you create the wellhead. You've all seen these. We've all seen these over the years. So you start out with the price of 63.61. You back out the transportation costs, the quality bank, other things. You and so that's a total of $9.12. So you get a wellhead value of $54.49. You look at the total value, it's $5.7 billion. Back up, same for the royalty barrels, $54.49. So the gross value at the point of production is $54.49. That's $5 billion roughly. Now you go to your next slide, and this is where we start to do the calculation. And you see, now there's two sections here. The first section right here is status quo, that's the current method. And this section is with the ring fence method. And you can see we've got a gross value of $54.49. You back out the operating expenses of $15.59. Now, the difference here is that this allows the companies to deduct their slope-wide investments. So here, you have operating expenses of $15.59. There's a total of $1.4 billion deducted. Now, if you compare down here, if you ring-fence, you're only allowing them to deduct $1.19 billion. And so that lowers the operating deduction that they can take to $12.84 from $15.59. You look at the capital expenses, same thing. Under current method, they're deducting $8.97, but they're deducting a really large amount from fields that are outside of the unit where they're being taxed. So it's $832 million. Now compare that. This is a big difference because it goes from $8.97 down to $2.26. So we're allowing them to deduct roughly $877 million of expenses that are not occurring in the unit. And what that does is this is really the number to look at, is this total lease expenditures is $2,456. That's what we're allowing them to write off now. This bill would ring fence it, and if you ring fence it, it only allows them to write off $15.10. Now, that doesn't mean they never get to write that off. It just means they don't get to write it off in this particular year. When their new field goes into production, they get to write it off against that production. But, you know, from a state's perspective, we have to manage our cash flow because we have obligations to make. And so what this results in is production tax value of $2.7 billion here versus $3.6 billion here. Again, status quo, you calculate the gross tax at 4% here. Gross tax is going to be $2.18. Under the Senate Bill 107, it increases the tax rate from 4% to 13%. So you got $7.08 gross minimum versus $2.18. But this tax rate is not going to apply, as you'll see in a second, because we're going to get a higher net profits tax. And so under the status quo, you're going to end up with, as I mentioned, $54.49. You back out the production tax value. After you back out expenses, it's going to be $29.93 versus $39.39 because you're not allowing your ring fencing. Okay, so you see a $10 difference there. It's a significant. You're allowing a tax under the status quo on $2.7 billion versus a tax on $3.6 billion. Now, you're going to conduct your tax calculation. It's the same 35%, and you're going to get $10.48 under the status quo, $13.79 under 107. But then, under the status quo, this is where the tax credits come in. You're going to back out $8 in deductible tax credits, which drops the tax from $10.48 down to $2.48. And so in the end, what you see is in 2018 at Prudhoe Bay, under the status quo, you're getting $2.48 per barrel versus $13.79 per barrel under Senate Bill 107. So it is an increase of $1 billion in taxes that you're getting. Now, let's look at how it impacts the producer's profits, though, because they still get that deduction of $877 million. They just get that deduction in a later year. And so this is after you back out the federal corporate income tax, after you back out the corporate income tax goes down slightly under Senate Bill 107. The federal corporate income tax goes down slightly under Senate Bill 107. The profit for the producer under status quo is $21.41 for the producer. Under Senate Bill 107, it's slightly lower. It's $19.97. So the producer is making $1.98 billion under status quo versus $1.8 billion under Senate Bill 107. How's that possible? Well, it's just timing. It's just this $877 million in off-field spending gets applied at a different time, gets applied when they start producing oil at that field at a later date or whenever they start to produce it. The next thing, which is really critical, is Senate Bill 107 provides transparency. We have very little transparency. And I'll go right to this quote from Rich Ruggiero, who's been our legislative consultant for many years, ever since the time I've been here. First was with Gaffney Klein, and then he was with Castle Gap. These are actual minutes. I just pulled these right out from March 1st, 2017. And he's testified regarding transparency in Alaska for the entire time that he's been a consultant for us. And I won't read the whole thing, but he does mention that when he testified in 2017, he says, I told you guys 10 years ago when he was with Gaffney and Klein, he wrote a memo that basically Alaska was one of the most opaque places with respect to data coming from the oil companies for this body to be able to make its policy decisions. And today it remains the same. The state is actually making decisions with a whole lot less information than similar bodies in the other governments he works for. He goes on, it's a worthwhile, I can get you the report, you can read the full minutes. He goes on, if he could make a suggestion, he would say that elsewhere in the world, much more information changes hands than in Alaska, and that data is available to the governments for setting policy. In fact, he's mentioned that much of the information that we're seeking under Senate Bill 107 is information that's just publicly available, that you can literally go on the internet and pull up in many other countries around the world. And so this is an absolutely critical provision, I would suggest, Mr. Chairman. And then we got a letter yesterday from the Alaska Chamber, which I'd like to respond to, because it says this is would unquestionably kill jobs, would chill investment, and reduce oil throughput in the pipeline. And I just want to remind people of some of the things that have been said over the years about passage of Senate Bill 21. We've had a lot of promises. We were initially promised more oil, more jobs, good for Alaska. We were promised 1 million barrels a day. We were promised more jobs for Alaskans, more oil production, more money in the permanent fund, more economic growth, save jobs in the PFD. And we have a clear, pretty clear track record at this point of how they've performed. It's been 8 or 9 years since the passage of this bill, and we can see. Regarding jobs, the referendum for Senate Bill 21 was held on August 19th, 2014. A month later, actually less than a month later, the headline on the Anchorage Daily News was BP to reduce workforce by 475 early next year. So the promise of jobs, oil jobs peaked at 15,000 in the state of Alaska, in the history of the state of Alaska, oil jobs peaked at 15,300 in the very month, August 2014, the month the referendum was held. And this was the headline less than a month later. And you can see by this chart, we were at 14,000 oil jobs, 14,600 in 2014. And then immediately, oil is still very high at this point. Oil jobs just plummet. They went up a little bit in 2019. Here in 2020, you had 7,800 jobs. And this was at a time when we had the initiative for the oil tax changes. And they said, vote no and save jobs. And you see we've lost another 1,100 jobs since that time. Production. This Senate Bill 21 was actually named the More Alaska Production Act. And what has actually happened is we have less production. In fact, oil production has gone up in virtually every other state in the United States, except Alaska and California. I know we don't like to compare ourselves too often with California. Production in 2014, roughly at the time of passage of this bill, was over 530,000 barrels a day. We're now down below 500,000 for the first time in our history, 486,700. And you can see production in Texas, this is going only up to 2018, skyrocketed. Production in offshore Gulf of Mexico has increased. North Dakota has skyrocketed. New Mexico has skyrocketed. Oklahoma has skyrocketed. Colorado has skyrocketed. The rest of the United States has increased. Louisiana is relatively flat, and in Alaska we're treading water. So just to dispel the argument that, well, it's because of low oil prices, that's not what happened in the rest of the country. Oil is up every other state in the country except California and Alaska. Now, I do want to go back and just talk about these two slides, because we talk about taxes and the impact of taxes on production. And this is a slide that perhaps the senator from Sitka might remember. We in the Senate Resources Committee that we sat on back in 2012, and it was Dr. Shelby Gerking, who studied state tax policies on oil production all across the country, and this was the report that they gave, and this was a direct quote: "Oil production is quite insensitive to the tax structure." And this is a study over 60 years' time, and what you see is that it can have some impact in the first few years between no taxes, a 12% severance tax, a 25% severance tax, drilling credit. It may have a little bit of impact over years, but it balances out over roughly a decade. And we have the same experience here in Alaska with CAPARC. We used to have our system called the ELF, the Economic Limit Factor. And this shows where actually at CAPARC, the second largest field in North America, you actually had, this is the production tax, where we went from 12.5% in 1996, and it went down every year through 2006. And the idea was that when the ELF was created that, well, as the fields become marginal, we're going to lower the taxes on them, and the lower tax rates will lead to more production. This is a time when oil prices were rising, by the way, and you can see this is what happened to production. It did not incentivize more production. Production went down right along with the tax rate, all the way down to zero. And we have a similar experience in Cook Inlet. Cook Inlet, you had a zero tax rate. Cook Inlet, actually we cut the royalty taxes, we had massive incentives, and you had Cook Inlet production just completely collapse. That's the end of my presentation, Mr. Chairman. I am happy to answer any questions. I think this is a reasonable bill. It doesn't raise nearly as much as would be raised if you went back to ACES. I just want to be clear about that. I also want to be clear, this was not introduced to balance the budget. This was something I introduced, this particular one, last year. But I've introduced oil tax change bills for many years, and not because I think we should be getting, we should be using it to balance the budget, but simply because I think we need to be following our constitutional mandate to get the maximum value for our resource. And I question whether we're doing that, certainly not when we're giving away massive amounts of tax credits and really getting nothing in return for that. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Senator Stebbin, did you have a question or comment?
Oh, a question, Senator Bishop. Senator Wilikowski, there's been, since we've put in the slider, there's been a lot of discussion on the transition point or the deflection point when you go from the gross tax to the net. And when we put in the $8, made a significant change upward in price before the, you know, when that deflection point would be to the gross from the net, and I'm surprised that that wasn't in your presentation, but do you have any comments on the movement of that deflection point?
So you're in other words, if we were to cut out the $8 slider to, in other words, the price points that that would impact? I'd be happy to get that for you, Mr. Chair. We were up till 2 in the morning putting this together, and it just didn't get in the final cut.
Follow up?
Yeah, I'm just curious. So this bill totally removes the per barrel deduction?
Yes.
Leaving the 35% base tax?
It leaves 35% base tax, totally removes the per barrel slider. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
When, and so just the iterations, when the bill was originally introduced by Governor Parnell, it was actually 25% with no slider at all. As it went through the process, the tax rate was increased to 35, and a $5 slider was added in Senate, went to the House, and that $5 was increased to 8. And as, I don't have the statute right in front of me, but as the way it works is every few dollars that the price of oil increases, the slider changes. And so it goes from 8 to 7 to 6 to 5, and I'd be happy to get the committee that information.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing
Mr. Chairman, this is Senator Von Imhoff on the phone.
Senator Von Imhoff, yes. Good afternoon. We can hear you, and please put yourself on the record and then ask your question.
Thank you. So we did have Gaffney Klein come before this committee earlier in the session. They are a legislative consultant that did extensive work on the oil and gas suite of taxes that we have for the state. And I believe a couple takeaways that they had was, one, our tax system is very complicated, and that there would be, potential consequences that we'd have to study before we tweaked any of it. And that would require time and public input. And then the second thing is, they did say that the SB, when we changed it in 2014, SB 21 did help actually stop the decline that was in a steep downward curve. And I can, take a look at that, or I don't have that in front of me right now, but Senator Wilikowski, you made a comment about how SB 21 has not helped the state, and I believe that Gaffney Klein indicated that it did stabilize the taxes, and they did say the taxes were very complicated, and I hope that this committee is not thinking about changing taxes in 5 days. I don't think that would be a good direction at this point. So I was just curious, Senator Wilikowski, if that's your intention.
Well, a couple questions there. I would agree that this is Alaska, according to our consultants, and certainly just in my experience, is probably one of, if not the most complicated tax structures in the world. I think that's pretty universally accepted. We've heard consultants say that. It is an extraordinarily complicated structure. As to what the consultants have said, my understanding is that Gaffney and Klein was asked the question in the House Finance Committee about the impact of lowering the tax deductible tax credits from, say, $8 to $5. And they, I don't have that in front of me. My understanding was they indicated that that would not have a significant impact on investment. And then the other point, I would also note that the Department of Revenue testified in front of this committee, and I asked them about if they had done any modeling of cutting the tax credits, and they said they had. And my recollection of that testimony also was that you could drop the tax credits from $8 to $5, and there would be no impact on investment. And as far as moving the bill quickly, I would agree that this is certainly it's a lengthy piece of legislation. At the same time, this is probably one of the most studied pieces of legislation, one of the most debated pieces of legislation in the state that we've had in years, because this was an initiative. This was something that was available for every single Alaskan to review and to study and to look at. And so people are familiar with it. In the governor's office, when they presented, I believe, before the legislature testified that they were considering dropping the $8 to $5 credit. So to answer your question, would I agree to move this, or do I think it should be moved? Absolutely. I'd say let's move it this weekend. If changes need, a CS needs to be made, let's make a CS. But absolutely, let's move it, because we can't afford to kick this can down the road any longer. We are seeing the results of dropping our reliance on oil revenue from 85-90% of our state revenue down to roughly 15-25%. It's as if a family, someone had a $100,000 a year job, and then just unilaterally said, well, to their employer, you know what, you don't have to pay me $100,000 anymore, just give me $25,000, and now I can't pay the mortgage, I can't pay for food, I can't pay for heat. That's what Alaska's done. We've just unilaterally cut it. There's no basis for there. There's certainly no rational reason to continue giving these credits the way we're giving them. So, by all means, if nothing else, we should reduce the credits and pass it out this weekend.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just one follow-up question, please.
Yes.
Thank you. I just want to remind the committee and the listening audience that the ballot measure failed 60-40 a couple years ago. So while the public has had extensive time, according to Senator Willikowski, to review this, it did fail. And secondly, I find it ironic that regulations, not statutes, but regulations alone in the state government take 30, 60, 90 days to rewrite. And for us to rewrite a statute so complicated that Senator Willikowski even readily admitted is so complicated, to do it in 5 days, I think is not the best foot forward for the legislature at this time. I think it would actually be very a poor decision. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to state that for the record. I appreciate it.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I would agree that the Senate's position when it passed after months of consideration was to have the slider at five. So, you know, in your opinion, Senator Willikowski, are there any other circumstances that that you see that would negate that Senate position today? And the other point that I would like to say is that although the Senate Bill 21 passed by 62%, the promises, all of the promises that Senator Willikowski presented never came to fruition. So the goals that were outlined by the senator never came about. And if there was a poll done, you know, I would say that that position would drastically change. And I, for one, would be open to the concept of at least addressing that slider.
Yeah, just to respond,
Senator
Mr.
Willikowski?
Thank you. Yeah, well, you raise a good point. We actually did debate the slider. We actually did debate a $5 slider instead of an $8 slider, and it passed. It's passed this body before. That is something that we have debated, and nothing has changed. And now we have, you're absolutely right. We were promised more jobs. We have thousands less jobs. We were promised more production. We have thousands of barrels per day less production. We were promised more investment. We have billions of dollars less investment. We were promised to save the PFD, and we have not had a full PFD in 6 years. And so the promises have simply not borne out. This $5 slider, I know, you know, I read this, the Chamber of Commerce position that this is going to kill investment. You got $86 million of investment. That's a tenth of what it was just in 2014. And take out COVID. It's gone down dramatically. So you have, at least in Prudhoe, it appears they're in harvest mode. Production is plummeting. Production is going down statewide. Investment's going down. And the $5 slider, absolutely, the 8 to 5 is something that absolutely needs to happen. It will have no impact at all on investment. In fact, the money that comes in will actually probably save jobs and all across the state.
Senator Stedman?
As I recall, when we dealt with Senate Bill 21 years ago, the Senate passed the bill over to the House with $5. And the bill came back with that $8 slider. And it was never analyzed and discussed at the Senate Finance Committee. It was never discussed on the floor of the Senate. We concurred to their changes. And I don't think there was very few people in this building that even recognized the impact of that change, and it was significant. So I think it is a legitimate discussion on how to do that deduction and that slider. It's hard to argue around that. It would have been nice at the time if the Senate would have analyzed that, because we probably would have recognized the significance of moving that point where you tip between the gross tax at lower prices and the net tax at higher prices. It made a huge change, and it has significantly impacted us. And so that if we could wave a magic wand, there's two big areas. That's one of them. And the other one is the transparency issue, that we constantly have our consultants come in and bring up the point that it's not transparent enough in Alaska for whatever reason. We've gotten a lot more transparency over the last 15 years than we've had before. But as I recall, when we did PPT, the departments were shocked at the numbers that they saw when they came before the legislature and had to try to explain it to us. So they didn't have any idea, or very little idea, before we went to the net tax and PPT.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You had a comment?
Yes, I do have a comment. The other point that I would like to make is that once the bill came back to the Senate, there was no discussion at a conference regarding a conference committee, and we did not, as Senator Stedman states, we did not have the opportunity to see what impacts that might have and go to a conference committee. I think that the people were worn out after days and days of debate and wanted to leave, so the least path of resistance was to concur.
So, Senator Wilkowski, did you have anything else to say? Because I've got a few comments.
No, Mr. Chairman.
So, you know, I guess I'll be the wrap-up for today before we set the bill aside. So let's go back to SB 21. So it did leave Senate Resources at 35.5. And inside that 35.5, it had just a little bit of progressivity built into it at higher oil prices. So it came up here to Senate Finance, and it got reduced to 33.5. And I was not happy with that. So we stewed on it for about 5 days, and then we got it back to 35.5 on the floor. Senator's correct. Industry seems to be happy with the bill at 35.5. When it went over to House, it came back with a per barrel slider increased to $3 to 8. And this is where we are now. And Senator Hoffman's right. I concurred. And it picked up one more concurrence vote. So it was 12 on concurrence. You can go check the record on that. So I'm going to have some research done on the Senate records on the slides that were presented here at this table, because if you take the slider out, that's the depending upon the price of oil, that's where you get that $300 to $453 range on a reduction to the state treasury. So with that being said, I'd just like to say one more thing to Senator Stedman's point, and it's been made by consultants on the transparency. If you go back in history, since the inception of Prudhoe Bay and the tax policy, we didn't have a tax policy in place while the oil's going to Valdez. It was still in a conversation. Every 0 to 7 years, this state legislature takes up an oil tax bill. I've contended that we should work together, and transparency is part of it, to get a tax that is going to stand at least longer than 7 years. So those are my comments for today. We're going to set this bill aside. We're going to adjourn here in a minute. And our next meeting is at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Anybody has anything else? Seeing none, we're adjourned at 2:10.